Hello, I'm Joan. I'm a Canadian family physician who also works as a restorative medical educator, facilitator, and coach. I create spaces that rehumanize the work of healthcare. I'm creating this podcast to remind myself, as well as anyone else working in a helping profession, that when you are working and caring for your human patients, you are the other human in the room. Hello there, healthcare humans. Thank you so much for coming back for another episode of The Other Human in the Room. So if you're listening to this as it's being released, this is the first episode of 2025. If you're watching this on YouTube or notice on social clips, yes, I am wearing the same thing that I was wearing in the last podcast. Well, actually, no, I took off my cardigan for slight differentiation, but I am recording this still in 2024. Before going off on the Christmas holidays. But I'm excited to record this one because I know New Year's resolutions are kind of a mixed bag, often a bit shamey, a bit shouldy, and they can have their own guilt cycle to them. And I am not going to be offering any New Year's resolutions to you, but I am going to offer what has really helped me the past few years instead of resolutions, which is picking like a theme, picking a practice, an intention. But I think really theme is the best word to describe what I do, which is like, what is this year going to be centered around for me? So last year's theme was pleasure, joy, delight, pleasure practices. And you heard that in a lot of the podcasts I put out were on that theme. You heard me also embody those in the world and then report back, whether it was joining a choir and having amazing, pleasurable, joyful, delightful experiences there, whether it was getting deeply obsessed with Taylor Swift and learning musical instruments in order to understand her lyrics and going to see her in Eras Tour. So like that was some of the, I guess you could say, superficial ways, but there was deeper work that happened behind the scenes and even in that I told you about in the podcast that were all around that theme of pleasure. I would look for and sort of decide what I did based on like, do I think this would feel good? I would decide to stop doing something when I checked on myself and said, is this feeling good? Yes or no, right? And so that was like a real driving force behind my entire year last year. And I loved it. And this year, I've already mentioned it on at least one podcast, I was already sensing through the fall what the theme for this year is, which is power. I feel kind of like shivery saying it. Power is not like an idea or a notion that I naturally gravitate towards. Well, I say naturally, but I've been socially conditioned away from ideas of power. Let's put it that way instead. So I'm like kind of cringing even saying it. I'm like, oh my gosh, am I going to talk about power this whole year? Probably not actually, just like I didn't talk only about pleasure all year last year. But I'm hoping to have it be one of the common themes in how I decide what to talk about on the podcast. And more importantly than what I talk about on the podcast, like how I'm deciding how to live my life. I want to be really leaning into the different notions of power that I've already learned about and continuing to learn more about what power means to me and what it means to really embody notions of power in my life. So these are just my initial thoughts. I thought it would be helpful to gather up, honestly, it was helpful for myself to gather up sort of some core things that I've already learned for myself about power and how I already think about power at the beginning of this year. And then I'll be curious if it makes sense at the end of this year to reflect on additional themes I've learned, failed experiments in power and successful experiments. Like I'll let you know how it goes as always. But yeah, it's good to start from what I've already learned and gained through learning. And that's what I'm sharing on today's podcast. So I would say like the core, you'd say teaching or the core idea that I have found really helpful already to learn and embody and helps me to differentiate what I even mean by power is to separate sources of power. Because it helps me to think of power as literally, you know, like electricity is power, you know. So when we think about power, it's like a force. It's like something, you know, you can overpower people or you can be powered over by people. It's like an energy force that exists. It exists in relationship to me in the natural world. But most of the time when we're thinking about power, we're thinking about it in relationship between me and other humans, really. Though perhaps by the end of the year, I'll be thinking more about the natural world. Now that I've said that, I'm like, yeah, that's a big part of it too, isn't it? But in any case, as like a simple beginning, I've come to really recognize that there are two major buckets that you can sort sources of power into: external sources of power and internal sources of power. I think when we, like, when you hear the word power used in like a pop song or in a quote, like sometimes we're saying them all as at the same thing. Like the notion I'm thinking of now is, oh gosh, what was that show? And then there's all the controversy. It was Kevin Spacey was the star of it. And then bad things came out about him, but he would always be like, power, power. He was like a political guy. It's not going to come to me. Doesn't matter. Nope, it's not coming to me. Like, you know, that Kevin Spacey political show. He was always going on about power. And like, you, when you think of notions of power, you often think of those like things that like media will portray. And it's about like powerful people or people, you know, CEOs and presidents and like that kind of stuff. And that is, those are sources of power, you know, because then the other way you can go is like, then you're like, those don't matter at all. And it's all about your inner power and sort of like spiritual gurus and like that sort of thing. And I'm sort of saying, yes, all of that is true. And it is very useful to recognize all these different sources of power. Like one of the ways I think of it is how the same way that I talk to my kids about food, which like we try not to use language of like healthy, unhealthy food, because the dose makes the poison. We talked about that recently on the podcast, right? So instead we talk about different kinds of energy. So like candy has a certain kind of energy, and energy is power, right? So it's going to power your body in a certain way, versus a carrot has a different kind of energy in it. It will power your body in a different way versus chicken, or if you are vegetarian, tofu, or like something with protein in it, fat. Those are different kinds of power. They're different sources of power. They're different sources of energy that fuel your body in different ways, that your body can process in different ways, that give you certain amounts of energy that can be used in different ways. And so in that same way, when we talk about, you could say, the type of power we hold with or in relationship to other people, it is useful to differentiate external sources of power and internal sources of power. So starting with external, because those are the ones I do think people more talk about, especially in shows like that political Kevin Spacey show, which it's still not coming to me. Should I just look it up? Otherwise, I feel like people are going to be like, oh, it was this. Okay, I'm going to just quickly look it up. Politics. What? Oh, why is it House of Cards? No, that was never going to come to me. Anyway, I don't even necessarily recommend you watch it. It wasn't that good in the end, even without the Kevin Spacey controversy. Anyway, but shows like House of Cards, it's like power. It's all about who's, I don't know, the most forceful, the most violent against other people. Sometimes literally, like I'm pretty sure people got murdered in that show, or like just intellectually, and you're like overpowering them and who like knows the best. I think we can pretend that those don't have any influence, but we know that that's not true. So it is useful to recognize that those are sources of power, you know, and some people like would purport that those are the only sources of power that matter. And so let's like break down even how there's different kinds of power within that external source. So when I say external, I mean things that are not within your physical being, things that rely on someone else either having an opinion of you, or some institution granting you a role or a resource that's outside of your literal body, right? So some of the ones I thought of, and then this is not a complete list of external sources of power. I like Googled like different kinds of power, and there's like 50 billion ways people break this down. So I just went with what made sense in my head. So the ones I'm going to talk about today that are external sources of power are like social power, institutional power. This one I call just proximity to privilege power versus proximity to oppression power. And then economic power, like how much money you have. And there's definitely more. And also those are very interconnected, aren't they? But you can see how there's some differentiating features, right? So the social power one, I think sometimes we think especially if we're doing a lot of like self-love work, we're sort of like, so that doesn't matter. And there's a way it does and doesn't matter, but it's useful to just recognize it's a thing, right? So like, depending on what society you're trying to have power within, even the like criteria of what will give you social power changes, right? So like, say you're trying to get famous on TikTok or whatever, your social power will be something kind of unique about you that enough people find is sticky and interesting and funny in the video you send, that now you're going to have social power. And there's sort of something ephemeral, but it's about people liking you in this very specific video short form based way, right? So like, there's that kind of social power. It could be, you know, say you're in high school, one of the definite factors of social power is if the right people think you're cool. A lot of it can be tied to, you know, whatever beauty standards or coolness standards that your particular society has, like, you know, in Mean Girls or whatever, it's like the pretty blonde ones get to be the at the top of the social hierarchy pyramid, right? So there's that versus like in a completely different setting, like the social power, like who was the most socially powerful, which sort of just means that like the majority of people respect them the most, give them the most attention, defer to them the most, you know. So say in like in med school, is it the smartest one? Is it the one with the most connections, right? Like it kind of depends on the setting you're in. It could be like if you're in a really nerdy thing, a nerdy social circle, be the person who knows the most about the thing you're nerdy about could be the one with the most social power. Like there's all these dynamics that can be at play. I just finished watching Bridgerton. So like social power there, yes, it's based on money, but it's also how like old and respected your family is, right? So like just acknowledging that social power is a real dynamic that shows up. The kind of example I'm going to use around this is like, why there feels like there's different power dynamics in play between me and a patient. So I have more institutional power over a patient, kind of inherently because I'm a physician and they're a patient, right? So that's a different kind of power, which is like because of my training and because of how the hierarchy is sort of set up. Maybe eventually we won't all think that way, but a lot of the way that we think of it now still is that paternalistic thing where it's like, listen, I'm the physician and I'm the one that holds the keys to several things that would facilitate your care. So I just do inherently hold that power. Even if the way the patient is like trying to overpower me is by like pretending I don't have that or like trying to boss me around, like I still am the one that holds that institutional power, right? But I may not feel that in the room at all, especially like say the way the person's treating me, I'm feeling like not cool. Like a classic example of this is like when I'm trying to connect with my teenage patients, right? I feel like I've mentioned this a couple times recently, but like I'm always trying to be like the cool doctor with them and it's just like, oh no, like they hold the social power. I'm not deciding who is embarrassing in the situation. The teen patient is. I decide what to offer them medication-wise, but they are deciding if I am cool. So we each have different kinds of power in that room. And I'm not equating like one is better or worse, but like there's something about just noticing that I find helpful. I just find helpful to be like, why am I reacting in this way? Oh, it's because I'm noticing I'm giving them and acknowledging the social power that they're having in this interaction, right? And then a whole other angle is one of us, what kind of identities are we holding in a society where different kinds of identities are prioritized and like sort of inherently in a way that's quite oppressive, given more power over others. So in a patriarchal society, men are given more power than women. In a heteronormative society, straight people are given more power than queer people and queer people are oppressed, right? Like in all racially white supremacist society, those that are non-white are in sort of a weird hierarchical ways, depending on which corner of your society you're in, but like that those have different kinds of power dynamics as well. So like a female, female person of color clinician may very well still hold institutional power, but if there's a white male older patient, they may be feeling all sorts of weird power dynamics at play, and just naming that those are real. They're imagined and that they're just constructs in our brains, but we've repeated them to each other enough that we feel those play out. We feel the potency of whose opinion is listened to in the committee, whose opinion is listened to. You know, you hear stories of like the physician comes in and they're like a younger woman of color, and then the larger white male nurse comes in and then the patient's deferring to them, right? Like, so you see how, yes, institutional power absolutely plays a role, but there's also other kinds of external power that are happening in any given interaction. Right. And then the last one I wanted to talk about was that economic power. So that very much like money is the resource of our land. It's not the only resource, but it's a very, very potent one. And so those with more financial resources have a different kind of power. But you can see where someone maybe doesn't have the coolness social power, but they have the economic power, and how those things can interact with one another, right? So I'm not naming these, it would be cool if some of these sources of power certainly were better distributed across people, in my opinion. Not everyone will feel that way, of course. It'd be cool if some of these sources of hierarchy didn't exist at all, like racism, etc., in my opinion. And because it's my podcast, I'll have to say it, right? And I think just like recognizing that these are here and they are real and they are external to us, all of those things are super helpful, especially actually that last piece of the sentence. So we're not pretending they don't exist, where we're just like, I'm fine and everyone is treated the same and I'm just going to bop around this world and everything's okay. We can do that, but we will probably often be surprised, like, gosh, why did that person treat me this way? Why did that person treat me that way? Like, we'll have missed on some of the opportunities to understand the power dynamics at play. And especially if we are holding power socially, institutionally, like economically, and we're not really acknowledging that we have it, we can accidentally, unconsciously misuse or abuse that power, right? And I'm not saying this so that now we have to feel all shame and guilty about it, but, you know, unless it's the pro-social kind of guilt of like, oops, I'm outside of the alignment of my values and I want to be brought back in. That's fine, right? But this is not about shame. This is about recognizing when the power dynamic exists, recognizing and considering that as a factor in how I have a conversation with my learner, who I have inherent power over because I'm the teacher and they're the learner. My evaluation determines if they succeed or not, right? So like, just even sometimes just naming those things with a patient, naming like, listen, I know I'm the physician, I'm the one that ultimately decides, and I want to share this power with you in these ways. Let's make this decision together, and this is where I'm going to say yes or no. Like, so we're not trying to give it all away, because it's not necessarily even ours to give away, but sometimes by naming it, either at least in our own heads or explicitly out loud, that can help to even just make the reality of what we're talking about more real for everyone and not pretending it's not there. And it can make it more of a shared power, collaborative conversation, whether it's with a patient or a learner or a colleague or whoever, right? And if you're listening to this, I think sometimes we can get really stuck in the places where we feel powerless and we feel like we have no power. And that's really dangerous, first of all, because people who feel like they have no power and are like backed into a corner, those people do the most dangerous of things because they feel like they have to get out of it, right? So it's always useful to recognize even what external sources of power you are still connected to, just as a reality check. And if you really feel like you don't have any sources of power, just sort of check on what you're most defensive of, what you're most protective of, because those could be places of power that you actually have access to that you're not like granting yourself access to, you know? Like a great way to know that I have institutional and economic and social power is to look at the inhuman stories that are strongest for me and really understand that they're all in some ways linked to, yes, the power of belonging, but also to loss of those sources of power. So like, why are so many of us so obsessed with getting sued in particular? Usually when we think through the nightmare scenarios that our brain plays for us, we're not fearful of being served documents and having our day inconvenienced and then talking to a lawyer. Like, those don't feel super fun, but that's not what's keeping us up at night. No, we're picturing us and our families on the street. So we're picturing the complete loss of our economic power and what that does to people in the society. because it's a problem, right? So we're picturing that. We're picturing, I know I was always picturing like being headline news. So losing that social power. So now I'm the shamed ex-doctor maybe of like, and, or even if I'm still a doctor, but I've lost social power. People don't respect me anymore. People think badly of me. I'm like an outcast in society. That's the reason I fear that is because I do have it now. I have some amount of social power now. Most people don't treat me like a pariah. So I'm afraid of losing that social power. That means I have it now. And then like the third way is like losing my license. So losing access to that institutional power and everything, all I sacrificed to get it, all those things, right? So what are you most afraid to lose? And what, how is that connected to sources of power you actually do have within the external context of the society you live in? It is very useful to acknowledge that those are there. And sometimes when you can, really use them to your advantage, especially it feels best to me to use them towards the advantage of the values I actually want to put forth in the world. So when can I use my voice as, hey, I am a physician, and now I have a chance to talk to, I don't know, a politician or be on a committee. And how can I use the power that I have by being someone of expertise in this particular way towards something that's meaningful to me, right? And where do I not want to do that? Where do I want to neutralize the power as best I can, or at least name it and declare it as like a, I don't know, conflict of interest, but like name it as a feature in the room, right? So all of that is so important to notice, and to not shy away from, not to feel guilt about, not to pretend doesn't exist, and also to recognize that deciding when and when not to say, you could say exploit or take advantage of, those all sound kind of judgy, but what I just mean is like when to be like stepping into the fact that you have social power in this situation. Oh, I'm friends with this person, so let me connect you. Stepping into the fact that you have institutional power. Listen, I'm a physician, and now from that expertise voice, I'm going to share what I'm going to share. Listen, I'm mixed race, I'm white adjacent, da, 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 whatever. Like I'm going to use my voice in this situation, and understanding that others in a society that's full of oppressive constructs like may not. I could decide when and when I do not do that. And economic power, when, like how much financial security do I have, and how does that allow me to do different things with my activities, with my choices, with my money, right? And like not in a, again, not in a shamey way, but just in an acknowledging that all of that is happening. So I might as well like know that those are features of what is happening in my life and in the world, right? So the last thing I wanted to say about these external sources of power, which I have just found it really helpful to kind of acknowledge are real, and especially not get them mixed up with internal sources of power, which I'm going to get to in a minute. But I wanted to, before I move on to that, just share a really lovely quote that is a lovely vision of what power can mean sort of across society and with societal change. So the quote is from Martin Luther King Jr. And it says, he said, power at its best is love implementing the demands of justice. Justice at its best is power correcting everything that stands against love. I just think that's beautiful. I really think of the notion, like, you know, I talk about these inhuman stories. I talk about how we can embody our humanity more completely. To me, that is correcting what stands against love. Individually, sure, but then, and then through that portal, it has become so much easier, more empowering for me to do the same in alignment with my values for my patients in a way that feels sustainable and like rich and pleasurable to me, to say, hey, I'm going to stand up against your workplace for you, patient, or whatever it is, because like it's coming from this place of like using my power to correct what's standing in the way of love, standing against love. Like I just think that's very powerful to me. So powerful to me. The power of the written word. There you go. Another example of power. That is a beautiful metaphor for power that I wanted to share with you. So that's the external power, sources of power part. Now, we can often get all mixed up between those external sources of power and internal sources of power. Like, And so the differentiator is that internal sources of power are from us. They are completely within our control. They cannot ever be stripped away from us, even if external sources of power are stripped from us. I would say one way to think of inhuman stories are these lies about us that are connected to external sources of power and bringing them inside. So like internalized racism, like I'm never going to be good enough because of my race, because of my sex, like the way that more women have imposter syndrome than men or whatever. It's like, right, because I've been socialized to think the standard is men and I'm a woman. Or, and like, if you look in healthcare, so it's like the impossible standard that everyone has to be an expert in a certain way and I don't fit that mold. That's bringing an external source of social power, which could be that we give awards to people who know the most knowledge or whatever. And that's like a cool external source of power, maybe. I don't know. Is it? Jeopardy winners are cool. But like if we then internalize it and say, oh, that means like I am powerless unless I have that much knowledge. I'm powerless unless I give that much. Like we've twisted it around. And now we've internalized a powerlessness story that doesn't need to be there inside of ourselves, right? So I made a list of some of the core sources of internal power that I found to be really true and effective sources of power, where like I literally feel like energy and power when I am seated within them, you could say. I'm sure there's a million ways that you could think of these that I haven't even thought of for this initial podcast, but these are the ones that really came to me. And some of them have quotes and some of them actually reference previous podcasts. So I'm not going to go into a ton of detail about them, but like, I just wanted to name them so you get a sense of what the heck I'm talking about when I say internal sources of power. I just thought of another one as I was talking, and it's maybe the cheesiest one, but it's got to be said. So, okay, I added that. So that means there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 internal sources. This is not a comprehensive list, but this is just what's coming to me as I'm delivering this podcast. So the first one is like, you could say the power of the truth. Or the power of radically accepting reality. So if you remember, I recently did a podcast that was about like, are you fighting reality, right? And there's something incredibly powerful about the practice of accepting what is, accepting reality, even learning to love what is completely as it is. Not in a way where you're like, yay, I want everything to stay the way it is forever, but just saying, yes, yes, this is what's happening. Yes, this is reality. Yes, this is real. Because we diffuse and give away a lot of our power. We burn a lot of our power and energy fighting reality and thinking that things that are real and true about life aren't. For example, like when you fight reality by thinking you can work a zillion hours every week and it will never have an impact on your body, that's fighting, that's an embodied fighting of reality, of just like ignoring your body, ignoring the limits of our physical beings and powering through. Some people would view that. You probably are doing it to attain external sources of power, by the way. And that will only take you so far, because an internal source of power, which is your body, who absolutely knows the truth of the universe, is at some point gonna remind you, right? I have found I don't mind so much if I am given less of that external source of power of praise or awards when I am sitting in the truth of my internal power, which is I know my capacity. I honor my capacity. I actually work under my capacity, as you've heard me say multiple times. When I'm in alignment with that, it is potent what is happening in my life, what I get to experience in my life, and how effective I am at enacting what I want to enact to the world, like the whole creation of this podcast and everything I've been doing, so powerful. And because I am sitting with the reality of what I love and know to be true for myself, right? So the quote I wanted to offer, that's from one of my faves, Adrienne Marie Brown, that connects with this idea of like being aligned with the truth, radically accepting reality as it is. In this quote, she says, she's talking about like the universe, but I just think of the universe as like reality, right? Because to me, it means the same thing. So what she says is, when I fear the universe, I fear myself. When I love and am in awe of the universe, I love and am in awe of myself. Imagine then the power when I align with the universe. something really potent happens when you stop fighting reality because of all these inhuman stories you're told, because you think you need those external sources of power in order to feel powerful for yourself. And instead you sit with the truth of your life and who you are and your humanity and what that means and how actually amazing and in love you can be with that and in awe you can be with that. Major power sources are released, including like literally feeling more energetic in your day, knowing when your energy is depleted and you need to rest. Like truly, it's a powerful feeling in your body, and you can enact powerful things in your life for yourself and for other people when you're sitting with this. That's what I really mean. That's like why power matters. It's like, it's how, it's what fuels you to do what you want to do with your life, including if you want to do nothing at all. So that's one source of power, is the power of the truth or radical acceptance of reality, or however you want to say that one. The second source of power, definitely equally as potent, is the power of choice. That is what really differentiates between external and internal sources of power, is like, no matter what those external sources of power say I have to do and how much they want to overpower me and take over my sense of worth and take over my sense of agency, at the end of the day, I always get to choose. I always can choose. I may make a calculated choice to, you know, go against something I believe with in order to remain safe in a particularly precarious situation, in a particularly thorny social institutional power situation. And that could be totally valid, but I'm still making that as a choice. So my favorite quote around this concept comes from Viktor Frankl, who wrote The Man's Search for Meaning. And he was, in a concentration camp during like the Holocaust. So when he's talking about like having talk about, you know, all your external sources of power completely stripped from you. And this is what he said about what's still left, what power you still have, even when all external sources of power are stripped from you. Between stimulus and response, there is a space. In that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom. You know, I talk on this podcast a lot about our emotions and what we choose to do with those emotions and the relationship we have to our emotions, our nervous system response, like our trauma response, however you kind of think about that concept. Sometimes it can feel like you don't have a choice. You just have to fawn, or you just have to be angry. And maybe that's true, but there's always a point in which, you know, your conscious mind comes back online, and then you get to choose what you do next. And it can feel super scary. It can feel like against all your conditioning. All the best rehumanizing embodiment experiments are against your conditioning. So they will always feel a little kind of way, feel intense in some way. And you get to choose. You get to choose how quickly or slowly you do them. You get to choose if you ever do anything I suggest on this podcast or any other podcast. You get to choose. There's power in knowing you have choice. Even if you're in a situation, you're like, I can tell I don't love this. And for now, I am choosing to continue with it because that's the energy I have, is to continue. I do not want to commit more energy to changing. That is powerful. That is taking ownership of your life. And that is the most powerful thing, honestly. So the power of choice. It gives you back your sense of yourself, your sense of autonomy over your life, which you do have. Not erasing, of course, all those external sources of power, which absolutely influence your experience. And within them, you do have choices. You always have choices. And that is a powerful thing. The third source of power is the power of rest. A quote that I love by Richard Strozzi Heckler that I actually have heard from Adrienne Mee Brown and I think Prentice Hemphill as well. The quote is, a relaxed body is the most powerful body we have. So rest being not only like how much sleep you get or if you're napping in the day, which are also fabulous, but simply like, are you resting into yourself? Of course, we're going to have times of activation and moving and stress and intensity, and knowing that there's a powerful source of power. There is a potent source of power, which is when we are rested, when we are relaxed. Hustle culture would lie and say, no, no, you got to keep moving forever. And that's when you're your most powerful, is if you're like in constant motion. Our bodies would tell us otherwise. Incredible creativity, incredible ingenuity, incredible resources are available to us when we are in a rested state. That is when we rest and digest. That's where we metabolize not only our meals, but also like our ideas and experiences of the day. Now, it's not easy to rest when we have deeply been socially conditioned against it. That's why I have a whole course that's called Homecoming. It's a self-paced course that's all about rest, where I kind of break down some ways you can start practicing rest for yourself. And I'll say practicing rest has been a really potent source of power for myself all the time, definitely this year. Recently, in the past few months, I've started semi-regularly lying down for like a 10 to 30 minute nap. Sometimes I actually sleep, but sometimes I just rest. I like set a timer. I lie down on a patient table, examining table, close the door. The energy I get back at the second half of that day is game changing. At some point I'm going to need to like actually get a little bed or something, because they're not the most comfortable, but they're good for now. It's enough. It's I'm able to access the power of rest by doing that. And it's delicious. It feels good, but also like I literally have more energy and my brain's back on in a way that it isn't when I don't do that. So just as a simple practice, right? And then the last way that rest is powerful is even how it disrupts social external sources of power. So when we stop and rest, we're saying, I am worthy even for more than what I produce. That is countercultural. That is not the dominant social norm of what would give you power. Like someone who rests is lazy. That's someone with lower social power than someone who is very productive, and for a lot of us. And it's also deconditioning that from within ourselves to say, you know what, maybe that is someone's opinion and will mean I have less social power, and I don't care because I'm going to rest anyway. So something really interesting happens, actually. That's true for each of the things I've already said and the things I'm about to say, is as we root deeper into these internal sources of power, we often are disrupting external ideas that are connected to the external sources of power. So it can feel risky. It means you can do it at your pace. But my belief and what I witness to be true is it also shifts that sense of social power as more of us do it, right? So yet another reason to consider rest activism. You know, Trisha Hersey. Yes, that's how you say her name. Rest is Resistance is her book, and she has the nap ministry. It's all about like disrupting the dominant hustle productivity culture as a real powerful like activism practice, right? So even disrupting oppressive forces of social power out in the greater world, they come from these internal sources of power within ourselves. And how cool is that? Okay, so that was the third one. The fourth one is very connected, which is the power of pleasure. So please see both of my episodes that are about pleasure activism. Also, please see the book Pleasure Activism by Adrienne Marie Brown, which is what I like talk about in those podcasts. And so I won't say everything I could say about it, but just to say, like, when you feel good, when you feel well in your body, and when you're experiencing the sensations of pleasure, those are powerful. Not only because it's like, wow, I'm a worthy being who deserves pleasure, and like that's powerful to reclaim, but literally those are sources of fuel. Like fun and pleasure are fabulous sources of fuel to get stuff done. When I feel like I have been more effective at like the kinds of little bits of change work I've done locally and even externally to me, when I've done them from a place of what feels good, I have seen the difference in a committee that gets together around whatever thing, where no one's feeling good, there is no trust, all the external sources of power in the room messing everything up, versus when a group of people get together centered around pleasure and something they enjoy and wanting to do it for each other and not wanting to have whatever arises get in the way of the fact that they love what they're doing. You want to know what's a more effective team? You know what gets more stuff done? What's a more effective and successful project? Definitely the latter, when you're centered around the power of pleasure. And so like the more we think about pleasure, not as extra, not as guilt-ridden, but like literally this beautiful and essential ingredient to power, to including powerfully getting things done, include powerfully having a life worth living. Like the more we all weave more pleasure into our lives, the more powerful we become. And that's probably why there's so many sort of socialized messages that tell us that feeling pleasure is bad because then we're easier to control, you see? So love that for me. It certainly, this past year, like I said, it's the theme of this year, and I felt the power of that. And I intend to continue to use pleasure practices as a vehicle and source of power as I'm experiencing more with power in the world. And just, I'll let you know how it goes. It's already really let me know, like, oh, this is not fun. This is not pleasurable. Even though I'm sitting in a room with people who hold different kinds of power, I can sense how this isn't where I'm going to be the most powerful and effective, because this feels the opposite of fun. And, you know, letting those experiences go versus other ones where I'm like, ooh, I still feel the aliveness here, even if it's a little bit messy, and just seeing how much more powerful and effective those encounters are. Second last source of internal power I wanted to talk about is just the power of attention. Always thinking about this. I was thinking about this morning as I was kind of discussing my ongoing dance and relationship with social media and my phone and why I'm getting drawn in, and not knowing that certainly our phones and all the different apps and players that are involved in drawing our attention to our phones, they all very much know the power of attention. They are monetizing and capitalizing on our attention, right? And so knowing that, yes, what we pay attention to is so powerful. Who do we want to pay our attention dollars to? You know, I had a whole podcast about this, so I'm not going to fully go into it. But if you remember, what you pay attention to grows. So if you want to powerfully shift your experience of your life, notice what you're paying attention to. You're paying your attention dollars to. Shifting over time, because it takes practice, because there's good reason you're paying attention to whatever you're paying attention to. But like, as you shift towards, for example, pleasure, rest, meaning, love, I don't know, humor, like whatever it is that you actually want to pay attention to, what do you want your life to feel like? Shift what you pay attention to and notice how much more of that ingredient your life gets, even if you haven't changed anything about your external circumstance. The power of your attention is real, and certain sources of your attention will give you power back. Like when you pay attention to your own body, when you pay attention to the relationships in your mindset life and notice what are generative and not generative to you, big things can shift. And noticing those and paying those the most attention really reaps some amazing rewards. And the last one, which is the one that I just like wrote down really quick, because how could I not say the power of love, right? I was like, I almost left that off the list. An internal source of power is the power of love. Love for myself and love for others. Genuine love, not like guilt-induced moralistic love, but like deep. And it starts with self-love. I've said it a million times, but I'll say it again in case it's the first time you're listening to me. It starts with having deep, intimate, specific affection, and not having it, but practicing accessing what is already there underneath, what your body already has deep, deep affection for every part of you. So connecting with your body and their affection for you, every little quirk, everything you've been socialized to hate about yourself, as slowly as you can handle it, one by one, reclaiming the love that you naturally have for every part of yourself. And through that, a portal to having so much love and affection for every weird, frustrating, irritating quirk and these other humans that we live with. That is powerful. That the power that we have when we are connected to ourselves and others, like that is the most potent, that is then social power, by the way. That is like, that gives us access to all these other kinds of power, even external to ourselves. In ways that are not completely within our control. But it's amazing what happens when you start with what is within your control, which is learning to deeply love who you are, what you are, why you are, how you are. And through that, loving other people, powerful. I don't have a quote for that because I literally just wrote it, and maybe it's self-evident, but not at all easy to do because we are deeply socialized to hate ourselves and other people. I mean, that's what the whole oppressive hierarchy power thingy is based on, is who are you socialized to hate? You're probably socialized to fear them, but fear and hate interrelated, right? So there you go. That's my list and my ruminations on power so far. just the beginning of this journey of sort of intentionally centering power and what it means for me. So I will let you know how it goes for the rest of the year. In the meantime, here are three reflection questions I have for you that I'm going to be asking myself a lot as well. So when and where do you feel powerful in your life? Where do you feel most powerful in your body? What activities make you feel the most powerful, and how often do you practice them? That one, movement for me, especially when like my heart's really racing, you just sense the potency of holy moly, my body is alive and powerful. It's an amazing thing. And the pleasure practices, the rest practices, all the rest in different ways. So those are my questions and reflections to you. Now, also, the last question is, what do you want to make your theme for this year? Your theme doesn't have to be power. It would be weird if all of our themes were the same, I think. So like, what's on your agenda for the year? What do you want to center and practice embodying in a million different ways, in the decisions you make, in the activities you do, and like how you spend your time, where you focus your attention? What is it that you want to focus on this year? And I recommend choosing one. And it's just for a year. And I mean, if you want, it can be just for a month, but like there's something really interesting that happens when you choose a theme. And for me, it sort of like comes from within me. Like this one, like came from my gut. I don't know how to explain that other than that's what happened. So what seems like it's a common thing that keeps hitting you in the face, that keeps grumbling in your gut, that you're saying, okay, I think for me, I'm being really drawn to beauty and being drawn to pleasure. I'm being drawn to, I don't know, what are you being drawn to? And what happens if you actively choose and focus your attention on it? Like, what could happen for you this year? What could you be reporting back to me at the end of the year? How cool could that be? So happy new year, everyone. If you're listening to it in real time and you use, you know, the January, December Western calendar. And if you don't, I'd say happy day to you then. And otherwise, sending love to you all. And I'll talk to you next week. I would love to take this work deeper with you. Visit joanchanmd.com today and discover my growing menu of options for restorative medical education to suit your learning needs. I offer one-on-one coaching, customized workshops, and self-study courses that allow you to connect not only with my work on a deeper level, but also with other healthcare humans just like you. So if you want to start humanizing your work and healthcare to a deeper level and do it in community with others, please visit joanchanmd.com and find those options and what fits you and your life today.